L'attenzione che da decenni l'arte sa porre ai contesti urbani, paesaggistici, architettonici e sociali.
Die Aufmerksamkeit, die die Kunst seit Jahrzehnten dem urbanen, landschaftlichen, architektonischen sowie sozialen Kontext widmet, war von Anfang an die Grundlage für die erste Ausgabe des Imagonir-Mir-Preises. Im Jahr 2016 haben wir einen Ort in der Umgebung von Chiaravalle ausfindig gemacht, an dem wir die Imagonir-Mir-Kunstresidenz einbetten und an dem sich die Prozesse der künstlerischen Ortsgestaltung entwickeln konnten. Chiaravalle liegt im äußersten Süden der Metropole Mailand und ist eine komplexe Gesellschaft mit zahlreichen Besonderheiten. Bis 1923 war Chiaravalle eine eigenständige Gemeinde und wurde dann in die Stadt eingegliedert. Heute umfasst Chiaravalle ländliche und landwirtschaftliche Gebiete, die Zisterzienserabtei und den Vetabia-Park, die sich in unterschiedlichen räumlichen und zeitlichen Abschnitten entwickelten. Zur Umgebung von Chiaravalle gehört auch ein Rest der Eisenbahnstrecke, die einst Mailand mit Genua verband und 2007 stillgelegt wurde. Die aufgelassene Bahnlinie ist heute eine aussagekräftige Schnittstelle zwischen Freiheit, Zerstörung und Beeinträchtigung eines Gebietes. Der Klosterkomplex von Chiaravalle Milanese mit der 1135 gegründeten und 1221 geweihten Abtei wurde im Laufe seiner tausendjährigen Geschichte mit vielen Ergänzungen erweitert, verlor aber einen großen Teil seines reichen Erbes, wie den wunderschönen Kreuzgang von Bramante, der für die Errichtung der Eisenbahn zerstört wurde.
Alessandro Perini, vincitore della prima edizione del premio Imagonir-Mir.
Alessandro Perini, Gewinner der ersten Ausgabe des Imagonir-Mir Awards, ist Komponist und Klangkünstler. Er arbeitet seit langem an der Beziehung zwischen Sound, Mensch und Umwelt, also an der Möglichkeit, mit Klang die Wahrnehmung und die sinnliche Erfahrung im individuellen und kollektiven Leben zu entdecken und zu verändern. Während seines Arbeitsaufenthalts hat Alessandro das akustische Potenzial von Chiaravalle erkundet, um seine Überlegungen zu Sound, verstanden als körperliche Erfahrung, und zum Zusammenspiel von menschlicher Erfahrung und der Landschaft zu vertiefen, wobei er die Wandlungsfähigkeit beider mit einbezogen hat.
Nella modificazione dell'una e dell'altro.
Die Erfahrung des Zuhörens wurde von Raymond Murray Schaeffer übernommen, dem Autor von The Tuning of the World von 1977, einem Schlüsseltext auf dem Gebiet der Klangstudien, der 1985 in Italien unter dem Titel Il Paesaggio Sonoro veröffentlicht wurde. Alessandro Perini zeigt eine Verbindung zwischen der akustischen Ökologie und dem akustischen Design auf, indem er, insbesondere in seiner Forschung in Chiaravalle, den Sound und seine Schwingungseigenschaften untersucht. Die einmonatige Residenz war Schauplatz einer Klangforschung im Makro- und Mikrobereich mit dem Ziel, sichtbare und unsichtbare Welten nebeneinander zu stellen und die Raum-Zeit-Dimension sowie die Erfahrung sowohl in der öffentlichen als auch in der privaten Sphäre zu vertiefen.
Thank you. interpretando alcune aree di margine.
Alessandro hat sich mit den verborgenen Klängen in den Rand- und Grenzbereichen der Gemeinde Chiaravalle auseinandergesetzt und sich dabei insbesondere auf die klanglichen Wechselwirkungen zwischen dem Natürlichen und dem Künstlichen konzentriert. Die Umwelt und die natürlichen Elemente, aus denen sie sich zusammensetzt, Bäume, Wind, Wasser, Feuchtigkeit, Temperatur und anderes, wurden als akustische Instrumente interpretiert. Die 12 Wasserbecken des Vetabia-Parks werden als 12 Klangquellen betrachtet, von denen jede aus Mikroquellen besteht, nämlich aus Hunderten von Fröschen, die sie bewohnen. Abflussrohre werden zu besiedelten Resonanzräumen. Das Innere einer Bananenstaude und einer Silberweide entfaltet eine überraschende akustische Wirkung. Der Schilfgürtel bietet sich als Klangquelle für Aufnahmen und Manipulationen an und wird zur schwingenden Polyphonie.
Per diventare una polifonia vibratoria.
Canneto sonante, or sounding canebrake. I was walking along the Vetabia Canal, which flows for a while along the old dismissed train line in Chiaravalle on a windy day, just trying to record the small inaudible sounds happening inside trees and plants while they were struck by the wind. I was using two AKG 411 condenser contact microphones connected to my handy recorder, and I was listening in real time in my headphones to what was happening inside the plants. These microsounds produced by the plant's tissues, by the vegetable bodies moving with the wind, kind of resulted in a sort of personification of the plants themselves. While listening with my headphones, I was isolated from the surroundings. At the same time, I was the only human being able to perceive those sounds. The kind of listening that was emerging was obviously mediated by technology, but at the same time was a very intimate one. For the first time, I felt a real connection with a plant. I have to say, I grew up in Italy in a family where plants were a big part of our life, but it was mostly my parents taking care of the trees and of the plants in the garden. I kind of loved the trees outside my house, but I always felt quite detached from them. And in Chiaravalle on that day, I discovered my personal way to reconnect to plants. Swamp reeds, scientifically called Arundodonax, become quite resonant when they get dry. So I decided to collect some of them that I found along the Vetabia Canal in Chiaravalle. 8 of these reeds became a sort of portable sounding device. Each cane was then planted in the ground and equipped with a battery-powered vibration speaker, a transducer. This transducer was capable of making the whole cane vibrate with the sounds that I previously recorded with the contact microphone. Thank you. Of course, I had some fun filtering that sound. The sound was gradually filtered in the frequency domain so that from time to time, a clear pitch would appear from the crackle of the cane. Then each one of the eight reeds became a source of sound, each one independently evolving between noise and pitched sound. The general impression was of a vocal octet with temporary melodies and polyphonies being generated from time to time. Visitors of the installation were able to listen in different ways. At first, from a distance, listening to the polyphony of resonating reeds, choosing their own favorite spot for exploring the sound of the eight reeds. But if the visitors listened with their ears directly on the reed, then a whole world of microsounds would be revealed. The attention would focus on one particular sound source, on the foreground, while all the rest of the sounds will shift in the background. A third way to experience the installation was by touching it. The sound was making the reeds vibrate so much that it was possible to feel it in one's hands, opening the way for a tactile listening experience. The sound in Canebrake was a particularly hybrid sound device. At the same time, it was one and many, it was dead and alive, it was intimate and shared, and finally it was private and public, exactly as the territory I was exploring, which at that time was owned by a private, but it was open for public use.
Und dann bewegen sich die Räume, wachsen aus ihrer verlassenen Eisenbahnlinie hinaus und führen die metaphorische Bedeutung einer Schwelle in sich. Wahrnehmungsschwelle und materielle Schwelle, reale Schwelle und symbolische Schwelle, die immer wieder neu erfunden und überschritten werden muss.
In questa direzione. La creazione di un primo Atlante.
Die Erschaffung eines ersten Klangatlases des uns verborgenen Lebens der Pflanzen geht in diese Richtung. Die klangliche Ausstrahlung von Pflanzen entsteht durch atmosphärische Einflüsse wie Wind, Regen oder durch das Zusammentreffen mit anderen lebenden Organismen oder leblosen Körpern, die Reibung, Klopfgeräusche und so weiter erzeugen. Es entsteht eine erweiterte Klangwelt, die ohne das Ineinandergreifen von künstlerischem Feingefühl, präzisem theoretischem Konzept und technologischem Aufwand unhörbar wäre.
And then later on, I dedicated one work to water. Stereofonia acquatica. It's one of the few installations of mine where the electronic medium is not present at all. Stereofonia acquatica was a listening station embedded in the landscape. It was meant to be experienced alone. The visitor would sit down on the edge of the Vettabbia Canal, holding the ends of two separate pipes near their ears. The other two ends of the pipes were kind of floating on the water top, with the water continuously flowing on the surface of two plates that were attached to the pipes. Those pipes were gathering the micro-soundscape that was happening right there on the surface of the water, including insects passing by and occasionally entering the pipes. And the pipes were also transmitting the sounds to the ears of the listener, as in a stereophonic sound art piece. Beside the water stream, which created a two voices stereophonic counterpoint, the resonance of the pipes themselves activated a sort of low tone, kind of a drone, which accompanied the whole listening experience. The frequency of this drone was, of course, related to the length of the pipes. The pipes were 6 meters long. The listener was not able to see anything of the flowing water because the canal was at a quite lower level than the sitting place. The listener was kind of acoustically isolated, but also visually detached from the source of the sound. The listening experience became kind of acousmatic, meaning that the vision of the source of sound was removed from the whole experience. So, in this case, the nature of human beings as visual animals was forced into accepting a completely blind sound experience, even if the sound was purely analog and materic, not electronic, as in the tradition of the acousmatic music concert.
Il fine della ricerca, sia nella sua specifica
Das Ziel dieser Forschung, sowohl in ihrer konkreten Umsetzung in Chiaravalle im Rahmen des Imagonier-Mia-Preises, als auch in den Schlussfolgerungen und Anwendungsmöglichkeiten, die Alessandro Perini für verschiedene Orte und Landschaften entwickelt, liegt in der Aktivierung der Kultur des genauen Hinhörens, eine Fertigkeit, die kleinste klangliche Umgebungen wahrnimmt, sie aber zugleich räumlich anders verortet, transformiert und in einen Dialog bringt, um sie in Polyphonien zu organisieren. Eine Art des Zuhörens, die auf ganz kleiner Fläche angewandt den besonderen Genius Loci von Chiaravalle ausfindig macht und als Teil des kulturellen Erbes und der Identität des Ortes einbezieht. Alessandros Ansatz macht die klanglichen Möglichkeiten, die den physischen Formen der Erde innewohnen, wieder zugänglich und lässt uns das zugehörige Gebiet in seinem komplexen, aber leicht zugänglichen Alltag neu entdecken. Die Fähigkeit des Zuhörens, die gleichzeitig Aufmerksamkeit für das Detail und für das Ganze erfordert, eine Haltung des Innehaltens und der Bewegung als Erinnerung, so könnte man sagen, an die sich verändernde Beschaffenheit der Dinge und Formen, wie sie uns jeder Beziehungsprozess, der gleichzeitig ein Gestaltungsprozess ist, vor Augen führt. Die öffentliche Bereitstellung dieser Klangforschung ist selbst Ausdruck eines konkreten Prozesses, der die Ränder von Chiaravalle durchstreift, sie auslotet und als Grenzbereich aufzeigt. Mit einer einfühlsamen Vermittlung ermöglicht diese eine Veränderung der Wahrnehmung des Ortes, die dem Variable Displacement des Imagonermia-Preises entspricht. La restituzione pubblica assume anche la figura del cammino. Es ist also kein Zufall, dass die öffentliche Wiederherstellung auch die Form einer Reise annimmt. 2 Tage lang wurde ein mobiles Laboratorium für Klangökologie eingerichtet, um im Rahmen der Landschaft von Chiaravalle durch das Hören die Klangfülle von wahrnehmungsakustischen Rändern zu entdecken, die sowohl räumliche als auch zeitliche Grenzen sind, Bereiche des Übergangs zwischen dem Natürlichen und dem Künstlichen, zwischen Mikro und Makro, zwischen Stadt und Land, zwischen Vergangenheit und Gegenwart, zwischen Menschen und Kulturen.
It's evident that this kind of sound walks we organized in Chiaravalle was not just a discovery of the local soundscape. Each stop of our walk was activated by installations that I embedded into the landscape, and these interventions all resulted in a sort of hybridization between the wild and the technologic, with the technology being a means for reconnecting to the wild. In this direction, I presented to the visitors the possibility to use a swing, exactly like the swings you find in playgrounds, with the exception that the rope was constituted by a 3mm steel wire. The steel wire was amplified with the same contact microphones I used to record the inner sound of the trees, and it was possible for the person sitting on the swing seat to actually play the wire, plucking, rubbing, hitting the string, and to listen to its amplified sound via headphones. A special relationship between the visitor's body and the produced sound was established because, depending on the weight applied by the body on the seat, the resulting pitch will be different. Another particular relationship emerged between the sitting performer listener and the rest of the sound walkers, who were attending a sort of mute, silent performance, creating expectations for who hadn't tried it yet and connecting to the people who already tried it by eliciting within their internal ear a sort of imagined sound based on their previous experience.
Thank you.
As you may already have noticed, this way to listen one-to-one, one source to one listener, is very different from the usual concert experience, which is one source to many listeners. But also it's different from the usual headphone experience, because in the case of the swing that I built, it's us producing the sound, blurring the boundaries between the audience and the performer. Once again, it's the time to ask ourselves if it's private or public music, if it's private or public sound, if it's private or public territory. Sound-wise, the potential of this instrument was so wide that a few months later, at the Darmstadt Ferienkurse in Germany, I wrote a piece of music for four of these amplified steel wire swings to be performed by a quartet of percussionists. Stating that this is a composed piece of music also implies a different context. While in a sound walk or in a sound art exhibition, the listener is free to move around and to explore the sound, is free to lose the grip or the sense of time in favor of a non-linearity of the listening experience, in a concert, instead, while listening to a written piece of music, the audience is faced with a start and an end, with a development of the sonic matter coagulating in what we call music. In Darmstadt, the compositional process could make use of the close collaboration of the performers Stanis Pili, Vincent Caer, Nagisa Shibata and Odette Geisals. You can find the original version recorded in Darmstadt in a CD titled The Expanded Body, recently issued by the Austrian label Kairos. Steel String Quartet was also recorded in studio by Ars Nova Ensemble in Malmö. And if you are curious, you can also find a video recording of it online. Later on, I further expanded the sonic possibilities of the steel wire swing in an acousmatic piece called Étude Tendue. Thank you.
Sono curiosa di sapere, Alessandro, quando e come è nato il tuo progetto di ricerca sul suono come vibrato.
Gerne wüsste ich, wann und wie Ihr Forschungsprojekt über Klang als Schwingung entstanden ist und wie sich dieses Projekt in Ihre Ausbildung einfügt, die Sie bald von Italien nach Europa und insbesondere nach Schweden geführt hat, wo Sie seit vielen Jahren leben.
My first project making use of vibration emerged from a question that I was posing to myself, which was, which musical parameters, both perceptual and compositional, can I successfully translate in the tactile domain? Or in other words, is a tactile music possible? Could spatialization, the technique of scattering around multiple sound sources to provide an immersive listening experience, be reinvented as vibration touching your body in multiple spots? So the first artifact that I prepared to answer these questions was exploring the spatialization of tactile sensation thanks to a chair that I equipped with 8 vibration speakers. The tactile chair was presented at the Darmstadt Ferienkurse in 2014 in the frame of a workshop led by the Austrian composer Peter Ablinger. To excite vibration on the body of the person sitting down, I used very low sine waves in order to totally minimize the impact of hearing in the perception of the work. Later on, I tried to use instead very present and rich sounds of crackling wood in a work where people were asked to lay down on a floor made of parallel wooden planks. Each of these planks was delivering sound and vibration at the same time to the body and to the ear of the person laying down, with varying choreographies along the back of the visitor. In the following years, I explored vibration in different ways. One project that I'd like to mention here was a prototype of a device capable of delivering vibration to the 10 fingertips of one's hands. A sort of programmable tool devoid of any sound output, only focusing on the spatialization of vibration within the body of the listener. This device could be used for many different scopes, for example, to produce patterns for meditation and body consciousness, like in the well-known body scan meditation. Or it could be used for tactile music, for one-to-one performances. For example, imagine another person equipped with touch or pressure sensor sending stimuli to the person wearing this kind of tactile gloves. Or it could be used even for music for deaf people, tactile communication systems able to connect people via the web, augmentation of perception, for example, to feel the same sensation under a performing pianist's skin, not to mention possible medical applications. Recently, I used the same array of 10 vibration motors to excite the strings of a piano, with a performer, the Italian percussionist Irene Bianco, that was picking up resonances with her fingers equipped with contact microphones.
Il pezzo che abbiamo appena ascoltato si intitola Epicentro.
Das Stück, das wir gerade gehört haben, trägt den Titel Epicentro, Epizentrum. Und dieser Begriff bringt uns zurück zu einer Dualität und einer gedanklichen Verbindung, wieder zur Schwingung, wieder zum Oben und Unten, zum Aufgetauchten und Untergetauchten. Das Wort bezeichnet in der Regel einen Ort, von dem aus sich ein physikalisches Phänomen ausbreitet, das sich auf die Erdoberfläche auswirkt, wie es bei Erdbeben der Fall ist. Oberfläche, Boden, Untergrund, Wasser, Morphologie des Territoriums sind dramaturgische Spannungen ihrer Kunst.
Curiously enough, geology is a kind of background interest in many of my works. Although I never had any proper scientific geologic training. Maybe Stereofonia Aquatica, the work with pipes amplifying and delivering up to a listener the microsounds happening on the water top, was, in a certain sense, showing my will to dig down while exploring the surface. Continuing on the same topic, but going back to my works on vibration, I used to walk with contact microphones in my shoes in order to record, translated into sound, the vibration happening in the soles of my shoes and in the different surfaces that I was walking on. This was also a way to analyze the ground from a different perspective. By feeding back the recorded sound into a vibratory surface, it would be also possible to play back and reproduce the recorded sensation of walking. Walking on grass, on stone, on gravel, on a metal staircase, and so on. What's fascinating for me in geology is the fact that from something that has emerged, the geologist is able to create stories of the past. The geologist is a bit like a detective or a doctor, investigating the illness based on the symptoms. But this is not always possible when the clues are erased. In the town of Falkenberg in Sweden, the main square, for example, doesn't show any sign that can reconduct us to its past, nor geological nor historical. Only the concrete, which covers the entire square, shows some signs of forces. These signs are crackles in the cement, revealing that the earth is still moving. To reconnect the above and the below, as you, Isabella, were suggesting, I placed two huge pipes on the rooftop of a small anonymous market building that is in the middle of the square. These pipes were staying on the top of the roof during the entire summer 2018, diffusing every day an 11-hour stereo track. The track was, in a way, telling something about Falkenberg's past. This coastal town was once sea and was formed by sedimentation of clay. In the same way, the soundtrack was evolving through different stages of sonic granulation and coagulation applied to the recordings of sand that I took from the bottom of the sea by means of a hydrophone, a special microphone used to record in water. So the sound was in some way emerging from the depth of the soil and bringing back a whole history that was erased by the human intervention. The Imagonir Mia residency was surely the first laboratory where I experimented with blurring the borderline between nature and technology. In fact, 1 year later, in 2017, I was in residency at the Spinola Banna Foundation for the Arts near Turin in Italy. And for that residency, I built three machines which interacted with the local clay in different ways, shaking it, carving it, eroding it, and finally producing what I called sound fossils. In these three sound fossils, sound was a force shaping the clay in the same way geological forces, which sometimes are also vibration, for example the earthquakes, are shaping our surroundings.
Gli esempi che hai fornito mi suggeriscono di tornare su un punto già accennato per approfondirlo.
Ihre Beispiele bringen es mit sich, dass ich auf einen bereits erwähnten Punkt zurückkomme und diesen weiter auszuführen versuche. Wir haben gesagt, dass Ihre Forschung innerhalb der klanglichen Disziplin auf einer intensiven Annäherung an das Zuhören basiert und diese mit einer sozialen Ebene verbindet. In gewisser Weise geht es darum, Spannungsfelder zu schaffen, um dieselbe bereits bestehende Verbindung zwischen der Klangwelt und der Fähigkeit zuzuhören zu verdeutlichen. Eine Folge dieser dialektischen Frage, aufgeworfen durch die Möglichkeiten der Interaktion, ist die performative Qualität des Klangs und die künstlerische Haltung.
The know-how I developed during these installative experiences has been brought back to music in my recent research and composition project, where I tackled the challenge of modifying classical music instruments by inserting or attaching robotic parts to them. This was meant to expand the possibilities of the performer in a sort of collaboration between human and machine, trying to avoid a sort of sterile spectacularity that's often emerging in this kind of projects, and rather aiming at creating performing situations that were not possible before. I already talked about Epicentro, a piece for piano with 10 vibration motors. Now we will listen to an excerpt from a piece for clarinet that I called Intorno alla traccia, a musical work that included two solenoid motors installed on the side of the clarinet in order to electromechanically push two side keys of the instrument. These two keys are usually taken care of by the right hand of the clarinetist, but only when that hand is free from operating the keys that are in the lower region of the instrument. In Intorno alla traccia, a computer is synchronized with the score and pushes and pulls the keys with patterns that I decided while composing the clarinet part. Thank you. So this piece features fingerings, speeds, and polyrhythms, which are impossible to a human performer alone. In this case, the Swedish clarinetist Natalie Eriksson. The motorized keys are programmed to interfere or to play along with the human action. And the same thing happens in an electric guitar piece called Rondo, which I wrote for Ruben Mattia Santorsa. In Rondo, I motorized the tuning pegs of the three lowest strings of the electric guitar, allowing for independent glissandos that are otherwise physically impossible to obtain. We can agree that applying motorized devices to the bodies of classical instruments is not too far from applying vibration devices to the body of plants, like I did with the dried reeds. In 2017, 1 year after the Imagonier Mia residency in Caravalle, I produced two works in which I embedded small speakers of a diameter of less than 4 centimeters in two different kind of bodies. In one work, I was using human oral cavities as resonant chambers. In the other one, I was instead using the trunk of a dead tree. In the first case, two mini speakers were positioned in the mouth of two singers. The singers were not emitting any vocal sounds for the whole duration of the performance. The sound was instead provided electronically by the small speakers in their mouth. The oral cavity was used as a resonant filter, and the singers were only asked to open and close their mouth, or to modulate it as if they were emitting different vowels in order to change the timbre of the electronic sound. Not something particularly radiophonic, I will say, because it's strictly visual. When this series of three pieces titled Three Studies for Two Voices is performed, the audience is confronted with a situation where the expected sound, which is a vocal sound, clashes with the electronic sounds originating from the performer's mouth, as if their vocal cords would be instead electronic sound generators. In this sense, sound and its relationship with the visuals transform the human bodies on stage into cyborg bodies. The same happened in my other project from 2017, where I incorporated 20 of those mini speakers into the trunk of a fallen tree in a forest in Connecticut in the USA. This project was made for the Biennale of Site Responsive Art organized by iPark. In this case, the hybridization was once again taking place between natural and artificial, creating a sort of cyber plant, but also between dead and alive, providing the audience with an undead polyphonic entity and recalling the cycles of renovation, where a dead tree becomes the nest and the food for myriads of other beings.